Hi, I'm Sarah Levy, and I attend Sidwell Friends School in D.C. I never expected that I would be up here giving my senior testimony. I decided pretty early into high school that a testimony wasn't for me. I felt that I didn't have anything to say because I hadn't had an aha moment, a moment of revelation where God suddenly became real, present, and tangible, and in an instant changed my life. All of the other testimonies seemed to have that, but I felt that I had yet to experience it. Although I had regularly attended church since I was born, I didn't see myself as a passionate or devoted Christian. There were many high schoolers in the youth group who seemed to exude Christ's love, but I always felt that I shied away from people, and I was so consumed with worrying about how others thought of me that I didn't have time or energy to reach out to and love others. An aha moment, I thought, could change that and could immediately make me into the loving, confident Christian that I had always wanted to be. Even after I decided to write a testimony, I still thought that I hadn't truly experienced God's presence, and therefore my testimony would have to talk about how unsure I was about my relationship with God. But then I realized how hard I was being on myself. Sorry, I lost my place. I was demanding tangible proof of an immediate and total transformation to show that I was really committed to God. But as a person who struggles with adjusting to change, that really wouldn't have worked for me. When I looked over a list that I'd made of events to include in my testimony, I realized that I had experienced my own quiet, subtle moments. They hadn't led to a sudden turnaround in my daily actions or thoughts, but they had slowly encouraged me to recognize God's presence in my daily life and to have more trust in Him. I'd like to share a couple of these moments with you. The first occurred on a trip to a Native American reservation, which I took with a Quaker group that was connected with my school. I was one of the only non-Quakers, and for some reason this intimidated me. I don't know why, because I've been going to a Quaker school for years, but I felt out of place, like the trip was designed for Quakers and was intended as a growing experience for that faith. I also worried that the Native Americans might be very anti-Christian because of some of the horrific experiences that they had had with missionaries long ago. I kept my faith hidden and just tagged along for the ride. Then one night, we were invited by the natives to participate in a sweat lodge where we all sat around very hot rocks in silence, sweating and reflecting. Each person would go around the circle and pray for someone or something. I struggled to figure out what I should say, and when it finally came to be my turn, I started talking about my grandmother who was sick. Suddenly, I was in tears, and I just couldn't stop crying. I didn't know why I was crying, and I felt so embarrassed showing these awkward, confused, and personal feelings in front of people who were still perfect strangers to me. But afterwards, each person came up and silently hugged me. It didn't occur to me at the moment, but looking back, their hugs and support felt perfectly natural. Although I had initially felt like an outsider, at this moment I didn't even consider it, because they showed me this incredibly pure love that seemed to surpass any boundaries. They just instinctively gave me love at a moment when I needed something. To me, this seemed to be a beautiful example of God's pure love. This really struck me because I felt God's presence where I least expected it. For the first time, I began to have faith that God was not just there when I noticed Him, but was a constant presence in my daily life. Another important moment was a series of meeting for worship periods at my school. Once a week, my school gets together to sit in silence for 45 minutes. For most people, this is a time to check out, think about nothing, or in my case, to worry. I'm an expert worrier, and this 45 minutes gave me ample time and silence to think about all the homework and projects I had left unfinished. It was supposed to be a time of reflection and worship, but I often found myself getting ridiculously stressed out and just wanting the meeting to end as soon as possible. I tried to think up ways to waste time productively or happily so I wouldn't just be worrying for 45 minutes. Eventually, at the start of my junior year, I realized that I could try using the period for its original intention, for worship. I'd never considered that before, but I decided to give it a try, especially since in my Bible study group the past weekend, someone had recommended praying during the day to try to take a break from things and to refresh yourself. My parents had also recommended I pray more often, particularly when I was upset. But I would always shrug them off because I felt that I didn't have enough time or that God couldn't possibly understand what I was going through anyway. Now that I had the time, though, I started this informal chat with God. My mind would still wander, but I'd try to refocus, and I would often end up praying for the things that my mind kept wandering to. For that period, I felt for the first time that I had a personal connection with God, because I could just sit there reflecting to him with no one interrupting, and I felt that he was really there listening to me. Finally, the last moment came one day while I was running in PE. As I was choking for breath, I looked for something to distract me from how tired I felt. I suddenly found myself looking at some of the trees around campus and just being awed by their beauty. At that moment, I somehow was able to take a deep breath and praise God. I'd never done that before because I normally only came to God with needs or requests. I had never just come to him in celebration of what I had. But I couldn't help pausing and thanking him for those incredibly beautiful trees, which I had never really noticed before, but were now suddenly so visible. It made me appreciate God in a way that I never had before. Even when I wasn't paying attention, he had been there surrounding me with love and beauty. This moment opened me to the possibility that God's presence was real and tangible through his awesome creation. He was even closer to me and to my daily life than I had ever anticipated, and this gave me greater confidence that he could understand what was happening in my life. Each of these small moments transformed me, not in the way that I expected, but they slowly made me more open to God's work in my daily life. As a prophet in the Bible realized, God does not necessarily come in an earthquake, wind, or fire, but instead he can make his presence known in a still, small voice. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Stuart Miller, and I'm finally a second semester senior at Walter Johnson High School in Bethesda, Maryland. I'll be a freshman at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia in the fall. I understand the girl-to-guy ratio at JMU is 2-1, which are odds I've come to appreciate at MPC. But as a psychology major, I'm sure I'll figure out ways to cope. I've been at MPC since preschool, which is unique because my dad's been on active duty in the Navy my entire life. Yet we've never had to move. I feel blessed to be graduating with the same friends that I went to kindergarten with and to be standing here today with the same members of my confirmation class. Three schools in one church in 12 years has allowed me to have great relationships with great people, and there are some relationships that I'd like to talk about today. I can't stand here and tell you that my faith in God is the result of a defining moment or a life-changing incident, but rather my faith grew as a result of relationships with people that have shown me how faith plays a role in their own lives, and they've done so with sincerity, humor, and compassion. I'd like to start with Mitch Gore, who is the director of the youth ministry from the time I got here up until last year. Mitch rocks, and I'll never forget the incredible role he's played in my life. As a teacher, a counselor, a leader, and a friend, he's always been there to provide unconditional love and support. The mission trips, retreats, ski trips, and camps have helped me define the person that I am today. Together, we've traveled the bumpy roads of Haiti in a beat-up old bus, church vans to Appalachia and Camp Ligonier, and it's always been a great ride. Mitch has taught me with God at the wheel, nothing is impossible, and to always let him be my driver. I love Mitch, and I know he'll be a part of my life forever. I just want to thank him from the bottom of my heart. Eric Castle. NPC was lucky when Mitch brought Eric on board. I've always been kind of envious that the first car my brother drove was Eric's black 350Z in the NPC parking lot. For those of you who don't know, it's a sports car. How many youth leaders would take the time to teach parallel parking? I don't think it's in the curriculum, but Eric did. Eric has been a presence on the sideline of almost all of my high school varsity lacrosse games, taking pictures and rooting on the home team. Most of my friends think he's a family member, and in a way he is, a brother in Christ. I know that I could call Eric in the middle of the night from the middle of nowhere, and he would jump out of bed to rescue me. Eric, the world feels much safer knowing that there are people like you in it. I don't know if it's possibly true to express how grateful I am for what you've done for me, but I'll give it a try. Eric, thank you for being my friend, for being a mentor to me, for always being there for me, and for being patient with me. I'll never forget you. Several years ago, I saw a men's breakfast posted in the church bulletin. Feeling manly at 14, I got up one Saturday morning, put on my navy blazer, and took the metro down to National. I walked into the room and discovered that I was the youngest person there by at least 30 years. But Mr. Gochnauer, the second youngest person in the room, pulled up a chair next to me and made me feel right at home. It's been a great privilege to have him as my Sunday school teacher, and I bet if he is as good in the classroom at Rockville High School as he is here, then we may have a future Teacher of the Year in our congregation. Mr. Gochnauer, I'm a better Christian and a better person because of the lessons you've taught me. And those lessons are lessons that will last a lifetime. Thank you. Now, I can't forget about the friends I've made through youth group and how much I'm going to miss them next year as we gather here today for the big send-off. Charlie, Ann, Allison, Grace, Kelsey, Carl, Richard, all of the Gores, Jesse, Luis. I could go on all morning with names. But since we have to keep things moving, I want to address the youth group as a whole. I just want all of you to know how easy you've made it for me to want to come to church. We've had one powerhouse of a youth group, and I've made a lot of friends through this youth group. They're friends that we'll keep for the rest of our lives, and we're truly bonded. Luis, we've had a lot of time these past years, and I cannot sit down and think about any of the trips that we've been on without laughing. Whenever I'm having a bad day, I think about the Dominican Republic or Haiti, and I would not trade a minute in either for a week in the Bahamas. While we most certainly have tested the patience of our youth leaders, and Richard, from time to time, it has all been in good fun, and I have a sneaking suspicion that we'll be greatly missed. You've been like a brother and a best friend, and I'm confident that we won't lose touch. Mr. Soldner, somehow you managed to put up with us for those 10 days in the Dominican Republic. I don't know how you did it, but I look back on that trip as one of the most fun experiences of my life. Like I've said, I haven't had a great challenge to my faith, but I feel like that's something that does not make us or break us as Christians. I also feel that because of the people I've mentioned, most of whom are sitting in this room today, I'll be prepared to face any adversity when the time comes, and my faith will help me overcome it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Lesher, and I'm a senior at Sidwell Friends School. I'm most likely attending the University of St. Andrews in the fall to pursue English. I've gone to church regularly my entire life, but never really thought about why I was going. I love to dress up in my Sunday finest and sing along to "This Little Light of Mine" or "The Whole World in His Hands," and always felt comfortable knowing that Jesus loves me. But when I was 9, my dad was diagnosed with lung cancer, life-changing news for an already shy 9-year-old girl. Really, I don't remember that much about this time as I hid in books to avoid the reality. I prayed every night for God to help my father get better, really the only thing I could do to help. But despite my prayers, he got worse and worse, bedridden and quiet as the cancer spread to his brain, and my prayers just seemed useless. He died when I was 11, and I've never quite understood why God would let this amazing man be taken out of my life. The passage for today about not being ashamed of the gospel is very relevant in my own life. I've often struggled with this idea, never clear on the line between pushiness and denial. None of my friends at school attend church regularly, and many are self-proclaimed atheists, either of their own accord or following the footsteps of their parents. And there's a line that I've always struggled to define here, the line of explaining that I'm a Christian, apologizing and regretting to have to leave Saturday night sleepovers early Sunday morning to go to church, and yet not wanting to seem preachy or above it all. And too often I've taken the easy route, blaming my mother, complaining about the commitment, rather than explaining that I really did have a choice, perhaps begrudgingly, and that the truth was I wanted to go. But as I've gotten older, I've gotten more comfortable in my faith. Finding that friends who, rather than passing judgment, want to understand and ask questions are the good ones, and that in the end I cannot describe myself based on my friends. And through all the challenges of high school, I've always wanted to go to church. The church itself became a safe place, somewhere I knew I could find God, even when I was struggling to find him in the rest of my life. And the same was true for the youth group retreat this year, which is such a different experience for me to be surrounded by other Christian teenagers, but a place where I was finally able to ask questions that had been bothering me, and where people strong in their faith can admit to not necessarily know the answers. There are still aspects of faith that I don't understand and questions that might never be answered, but I will always be able to return to church to renew my faith and keep Christ at the center of my world. Thank you.
morning. My name is Della Romano, and I am a senior at Woodrow Wilson High School. I will be attending the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill this fall. Sitting in the pew, it was just an ordinary Sunday, around 11:30, and my attention was focused on the sermon by Reverend Wilson. It was April 3rd, the fourth Sunday in Lent, but this ordinary day didn't seem so ordinary anymore. As Reverend Wilson spoke of a song for the journey, a few words struck me. As he preached from the Psalms, he described, "And now the pilgrim stands in the door of the temple, wondering, where now? From where will my help come now?" At this moment, I felt God calling me to give up my dreams for a more practical alternative. Church has been a part of my life for as long as I can remember. In fact, I was baptized, raised, and confirmed here at NPC. From the early years, I was told that God loved me, and I never had trouble accepting this fact, but somehow, I never really stopped to marvel at it. Maybe that's not so surprising. I was pretty young and absorbed in my everyday, every moment activities, most importantly, baseball. I did believe I could use baseball to serve God. I had a plan. I was going to become the first female in Major League Baseball, and by proclaiming myself as a Christian, everyone would follow suit, and voila, all the problems in the world would disappear. But when I was 11, I lost some of my naive certainty, and it wasn't on the baseball field. My grandfather died after an impossibly painful year with lung cancer. We all knew it was coming, but that didn't make it any easier. It hit me hard. It was my first experience with death, and it was devastating that the same man who helped me learn baseball wouldn't be there to see me play. I found strength in my family's strength and the love and care God showed me. I learned that being a positive role model would not do the trick. Rather, people in pain need a loving and present person. But I wasn't sure how to do this for others. I could throw a curveball or field a ground ball, no problem, but I didn't exactly know how to be that loving and present person. Then 2 years ago, God sent me a lesson, and again, it didn't have anything to do with baseball. I spent a month of my summer volunteering as a cook in a Young Life camp. For those of you who aren't familiar with Young Life camps, they provide 5-day sleepaway experience that exposes teenagers, sometimes for the first time, to God's message. Throughout the 10-hour days in the kitchen, I knew that I was serving others, but during the first weeks, I was most focused on myself. My Christian faith was growing, and although the days were long and the work was hard, the time was spent with my newfound friends. I was so absorbed in my own experience that I did not pause to fully consider the people that I was working so hard to serve, those on the other side of the kitchen door. My perspective changed when 100 single teenage moms arrived with their little ones for a week as campers. It was during this week that I appreciated for the first time the profound effect that generosity and no strings attached hard work can have on others' thinking. I overheard a conversation in which some moms expressed amazement that the entire camp staff was unpaid. This fact alone seemed as powerful to them as the messages they had been hearing about a loving and caring God. Even though I was not directly delivering the message, I knew that what I was doing made a difference and that God was changing my heart to more resemble that of a servant. Maybe he was teaching me to be that loving and present person. This brings me back to April 3rd, sitting in church. I had been in the process of my college decision. I had the choice to attend Oberlin College to play baseball, attend Keuka College on a full-ride scholarship and play baseball there, or go to UNC Chapel Hill. For my whole life, my dream has been to keep playing baseball, moving up at every level. I was leaning heavily toward Keuka, and I could imagine myself living out my dream there. I thought of the stories I could tell my future children, a nice icebreaker to start a conversation off, even the advantage I would have in applying for jobs with a resume that included pitching on a men's college baseball team. On April 3rd, however, everything came into perspective. As I was in the midst of my where now moment, I knew where my help comes from. I knew that there wasn't a right or wrong choice, but I felt powerfully called to be more than just baseball Della. So I will be going off to school, losing a central part of my identity that has existed since I was 5 years old. I will not be playing baseball, but I know whose team I am on, for I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Luis Bowser. I'm a senior at BCC High School, and in the fall, I will be attending University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. From an early age, my mother and father instilled good Christian morals and values into me, and that while my mom and dad raised me, the one who truly had an impact on me was my abuelita. My abuelita, my grandmother on my mother's side, was a strong Christian Dominican woman who was never afraid to speak her mind and stand up for herself. She was the one who got me up every morning, cooked for me, and tended to me when I was hurt. One thing that she had a habit of doing was whenever my brother or I had a loose tooth, she'd be like, "Oh, let me see that right there. Oh, ooh, whoop." Just rip it out. And it would hurt for a little bit, but then it would feel better. Our family lived life well for quite a while. But then when I was in the fourth grade, my father came to tell me that my parents were getting a divorce. To me, this came completely out of the blue, and I felt like I would have been hit by a train going 100 miles an hour. I didn't know why God had decided to do this to me, but I accepted it, and I knew that things were going to get better. But little did I know that this wasn't the only train coming, and I was standing in the middle of the tracks. While my parents' divorce was a big shock to me, I was able to deal with it. The more I thought about it, the more I thought that it wasn't so bad. I still got to see both of them, and besides living in two houses, life was pretty much the same. But another twist came into my life. My abuelita had been diagnosed with cancer, and it was spreading. Very slowly, she stopped doing the things that she loved to do so much. She was not as active around the house, and this is what really frightened me. The one thing about her was that even if she was ill or if her back or knees were hurting, she would not hesitate to cook up something delicious or do a few loads of laundry. But this time she really couldn't, and that really scared the heck out of me. On September 22, 2004, my abuelita, Gladys Antonia Smith, passed away. My grandmother, the very cornerstone that my life needed, was gone. I was blown away. I didn't know how to handle myself. This was a vital turning point in my life, too, when I needed her most. I was changing schools, and I knew that I didn't know a single person who went to my new school. My first day as a new kid was a train wreck. I didn't have any friends. I got lost more than once. I ate alone during lunch, and I felt simply like I just didn't fit in. Days went by like this, and days turned to weeks. I was still very lonely. So I thought to myself, people aren't going to approach me to be friends with me, so I have to put myself out there. And that's truly when I developed my outgoing personality. So my life had begun to improve. God had smiled upon me, and things were getting better. I thought, well, this is really when my life has begun to turn around. I was making lots of friends and doing well in school. I thought everything bad that was going to happen in my life was over and done with, but I hadn't seen anything yet. It was just like any Thursday evening at my dad's house. I was cleaning out the shed for him while my brother was upstairs watching television. I had almost finished when I got a call from my mom. This wasn't unusual because my mom would call in most nights. I talked with her for a few minutes until she asked for me to go upstairs to my brother. We sat for a while talking to her when suddenly a squad of police officers burst through the door. I grabbed my brother and looked on in awe as they marched through her house, searching through every drawer and closet for something that didn't belong. One of the officers walked up to me and asked if he could talk to my mom. I handed the phone to him, and he only said two words to her, "We're in." At this point, I was confused beyond belief. The officer told my brother and I to get together a bag of clothes and get ready to leave because we weren't going to be coming back. When we went downstairs, one of our close family friends was waiting for us. She took us to our mom's house, and when we got there, my aunt and uncle on my dad's side of the family were there to talk to us. Together, they all sat me down, looked me straight in the eye, and told me something I was not prepared to handle. My father had been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, and I was not legally allowed to see him anymore. To this day, this remains the most traumatic experience of my life. In the following weeks after the incident, I was still allowed to have communication with my dad. But then I was told that the phone calls had to stop, and we had to sacrifice all communication with him completely. And just like that, I had no communication with my father at all. Very, very slowly, I fell into a state of depression and hopelessness. I asked God many times, from day to day, why he would do this to me, why he would make my life fall apart like this. Finally, I decided that I had to do something, because I couldn't keep living this way. I decided to stop taking this whole ordeal on my shoulders and hand it over to someone who I knew could handle anything, God. I realized that God wanted to lift this burden off of me, but I simply wouldn't let him, and it had taken me much too long for me to do this. All this time, I had family and friends who loved me so much and would do absolutely anything for me all around me, but it was just too hard for me to realize this. Ever since then, I've continued to build upon my faith and my friendships. What has not killed me has made me stronger, and I am prepared for whatever may come next in my life. I would like to thank both of my loving parents, Rosa and Scott, my brother Carlos, my youth leaders, Mitch and Eric, all of my friends and family, and last but not least, my partner in faith at NPC, Stuart Miller. Thank you all for everything, and have a good day.
Good morning. My name is Jesse Wagner, and I'm a senior at Quince Orchard High School. Next year, I plan on attending Wake Forest University and double majoring in psychology and theater. Throughout much of my life, my faith was greatly influenced by those around me. My relationship with God was whatever my parents said it should be, or whatever my friends thought it should be. It was never my own. In the October of my freshman year of high school, I had my first panic attack at a football game. These panic attacks progressed and transformed into fits of rage and convulsions. They became so frequent that I had to leave school for a short period to get them under control. I was only a freshman in high school, and already I was widely labeled. They called me seizure girl and spread rumors about how I was not fit to be in school and that I should be put in something like a mental institution. I was diagnosed with an anxiety disorder, a panic disorder, and a conversion disorder. Those are phrases that many adults don't understand, let alone a naive 14-year-old child. This was certainly not how I wanted to begin my high school career. I was judged, I was labeled, and I was rejected within the first few months of the 4 years that shape a teenager's life. Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 50, describe a party that Jesus attended at a Pharisee's house. A woman, who was a sinner, heard about this party that Jesus was going to be present at, cleared her schedule of all obligations, and made sure she would be there, no matter the circumstances. When Jesus arrived, the woman kneeled before him, weeping, and began to bathe his feet with her tears and dry them with her hair. She then continued kissing his feet and anointing them with ointment. The other guests at the party were shocked that Jesus Christ, of all people, was allowing such a woman to even touch him. Jesus then said, "Look at this woman kneeling here. When I entered your home, you did not offer me water to wash the dust from my feet, but she has washed them with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not greet me with a kiss, but from the first time I came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You neglected the courtesy of oil to anoint my head, but she has anointed my feet with rare perfume. I tell you, her sins, and they are many, have been forgiven. So she has shown me much love. But a person who is forgiven little only shows little love." Then Jesus said to the woman, "Your sins are forgiven." I was that woman. I still am that woman, and I will always be that woman. A sinner that weeps at Jesus' feet, not worthy of forgiveness, but receiving grace nonetheless. I had searched for love in relationship with guys. I searched for rest and pain medications. I searched for release and self-injury, and eventually I had searched for an end in suicide. I tried most everything to find acceptance, peace, and love, but I never found it by looking only within this world. Eventually, through much support and prayer, I began the process of healing. My parents encouraged me to look outside the sinful world and to God for fulfillment. As I continued to grow and mature, I began to understand more and more about the sacrifice that Jesus had made for me and for the people that I love. He looked past my sins and my flaws and saw the beautiful young woman that God had created me to be. This past summer, I went to a Young Life camp to serve on the work crew there. I honestly had not expected much. I still had many doubts about Jesus and what he could do for me, and at the time, I was sure that people would judge me for all that I had done. But what I found was nowhere near the pain that I had been expecting. For once, I felt accepted, not only by my peers, but also by the God that had created me. By finally letting Christ into my heart, I allowed him to wipe away all of my stains so that I was a new person through him. I had believed myself to be unworthy of love and forgiveness. I did not see myself as good enough to even kneel before Jesus and wipe his feet with my hair. But he allowed me to struggle in order to let me weep at his feet so that he may cleanse me. He accepted me. He forgave me. He will always love me, and I will always be his daughter. I would like to thank my best friends, Lauren, Ciara, and Shannon, for loving me even when I pushed them away. I would also like to thank my best friends, Emily and Deja, for supporting me in my long walk with Christ. The youth group at National Presbyterian has impacted my life so much and has helped me to form my strong relationship with Christ, especially through mission trips to the Dominican Republic and Haiti. And lastly, I would like to thank my family. For a while, my little brother David was the only light that I saw in this world, and the only reason I saw for waking up in the morning. He is my best friend and the star of my life. My older brother Michael is such an inspiration to me, and I love him, even though I claim to not most of the time. My parents have more love for me than I will ever understand. Their belief in me has never wavered, and their strength has always driven me. Psalm 139, 11 through 12 says, "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light around become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like day, for darkness is as light to you." Thank you.